You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 103. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
BJ is at rehearsal for a stage play that she's doing, or something like that, some theatrical performance. She is going to try to join us later. We shall see if that happens. You never know with these types of like rehearsals, man. They're unpredictable when you get into live theater. From my, you know, my theatrical experience as far as like live theater, stage theater or whatever was like one play in college and a couple in high school. So I really know what I'm talking about.
Were you drinking something? Let me drink something too.
Awkward silence. Sorry, just drinking a little bit of Coke Zero.
Gatorade. Yeah.
I'm trying to wake up here. I'm exhausted. Just so you know, if you have small children and decide, hey, let's go out for some drinks and food with another couple with small children, don't do it.
You're just an idiot, Sean.
Stay home.
Fucking
and idiot. Maybe grill up some burgers and hot dogs or order a pizza.
Dude, that sounds like a lot better.
A lot better.
Because you're paying like a fuck ton of money to go out to eat, and the whole time you're like nervous.
Oh my God. I swear everyone in the restaurant was looking at us the whole time. And like,
of course. Dude. Like, what does Noah say? Because even when you're at home, he's like, you know, hey, daddy, I pooped in the toilet.
He's
like,
getting better now. He's almost four. I mean, he's cool. He has a little faux hawk now. He got a little haircut today. He's you know, but yeah, after like an hour, the kids are done. My older kids are having a friggin' wrestling match at their end of the table. And the other two kids of our friends, they're like 2 and 3. So they're just like,
That sounds like nightmares, dude.
It was a nightmare. We just kept ordering drinks for us.
So, sounds good.
We're your parents of the year. Your kid misbehaves, order another drink.
And then you go home and talk about porno.
It'll be okay. Yeah. Today.
You're father of the year, dude.
Father. Yeah. Father of the year. So if anyone wants to make me a plaque, drop me a line. But yeah, today we are talking about Vinegar Syndrome's April package.
Emphasis on package.
We're not above any sort of stupid puns around here. This one was I was very much looking forward to because it is the release of Dolomite.
Dang, dude, Blu-ray. You said it. Dang, you sound like Rudy Ray Moore.
Rudy Ray Moore in HD. We'll be talking about that. The other things that came along in the package were Trashy Lady, starring Ginger Lynn, unveiled.
And Harry Reams.
On DVD. And then All Night at the Pono. 12-unit continuous show.
Oh, DVD my God, set. Dude.
What is this, like 12 hours of just
unveiled? Yeah, a unit is hours, and it is literally 12 hours. And I am going
to talk about it. Did you endure the full 12 hours?
I will talk about it when we get to it, Sean.
Awesome. I can't wait.
Don't want to spoil for the listeners already.
But first, before we jump into all that, let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow. I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
What you got, Sean?
All right, I finally going through my stack of my watch list. God damn it, what's going on? Hold on, I'm trying to bring up Letterboxd here.
Oh my God.
It's like, you know, keep track of everything I watch. All right, here we go. So the first things I want to talk about are Arrow Video's region, actually it's all regions of their Blu-ray of Nightmare City. This came back out a while back, and I finally got my hands on it. I was excited because I had the Raro Blu-ray of Nightmare City. And the thing with this release is, and they were very open about it, was they couldn't really, you know, it was like they had a better transfer to work with, but it had some problems in certain areas that made it look worse than the other transfer. But then the other transfer was super soft because it was, I don't know, I'm going to mess up the specifics here. Hold on, let me pull a YouTuber and read off the back of the box here.
Sounds like some, you know.
It doesn't have it on here, but basically they used two different negatives. One, I think, was the inner positive, and then the other one was something else. But they're both, 35 millimeter negatives. But they have, the thing I loved about it was they have kind of a short little featurette on the limits of restoration, and they show the two different versions kind of side by side and what the things that they could improve on with one of the negatives that Raro didn't have their hands on, and then compared to, I think the other transfer was pretty much what Raro had to work with for that, because that Blu-ray was pretty like muddy looking, and it looked like you're almost watching it through a dirty window sometimes because it was soft.
Yeah,
but
that's what I think everybody has been used to, even from the VHS to Blue Underground's DVD.
Yeah,
it looked very cloudy. Mm-hmm. That's what I would say it looks like.
So that version's on this Blu-ray, and then they have their new scan, which has some print damage in certain spots. But I think I liked it was the clarity on when it was clear, it was amazing. And for a movie like this, if it's clear, I can almost look past or forgive any of the, you know, damage to the film. Because it almost gives it kind of a grindhousey feel. I'd rather have it be clearer and deal with that than have it be muddy all the way through. So, it was pretty cool. I'm glad to have this version.
What did you think of the movie?
Nightmare City is awesome. I mean, I love this flick.
Yeah, no, I like how they all look like they have pizza on their face.
Yeah, the makeup effects don't look any better in HD, but it's, you know, you got,
no, it's a lot of fun, dude. I love that ending though.
You got violent zombies,
classic.
Yeah, violent zombies classic, with weapons, and they're running, and the opening airfield sequence is pretty fantastic, and I don't know, it's great. So
that's how all of, you know, Umberto Lenzi's movies were. They're just, I don't know, they're just very gritty, and you know, most of the time they're very violent. His some of his like giallo films, like Knife of Ice and Eyeball, like they're pretty violent giallos. So I always kind of dug his style. He also has that Spring Break movie. Like, it's called like Welcome to Spring Break. It's really fucking good. I think it's called, what's the name of it over here? I think it was released on VHS as Welcome to Spring Break. And then when it hit DVD or something, it was called like Nightmare Beach. Like a fucking guy, like in a motorcycle helmet. Like it's really fucking cool. But I think it's all his movies. So it's nice to see, you know, a company take the time to really show Lindsay's vision as much as, yeah, you know, what it was, how it was meant to be seen originally, like if we were in the theater. So yeah, it's pretty cool. And it's a nice, I have that Blu-ray too. And it's really nice. I actually never picked up the Raro video, just because I don't know. It was one of those things I just never got around to. And I've seen the movie so many times, and I had the DVD, and I had the big box VHS when it was called, you know, City of the Walking Dead. And then, I was so familiar with the movie, just never picked it up. But I knew a new Arrow went through all that trouble, and,
right,
you know, they even had a whole write-up on their blog about it. And like, I totally got to give that the time of day.
So yeah, and I sold the Raro one and got this, so.
Yeah.
All right, so next up. Dude, I finally got around to seeing, after all this time, Rutger Hauer in Split Second. courtesy 101 Films, this is a Region 2 Blu-ray, or Region B Blu-ray.
And you get this on Blu-ray everywhere besides from the U.S.
Yeah, so weird, man.
It's like, yeah, I think it's because of the HBO thing. I think HBO.
Oh, that's right.
That's the reason why. It was on DVD, and that was – I think it's long out of print.
Yeah.
But –
Yeah, this thing
– It's a hell of a movie, man.
It's pretty great. Rutger Hauer firing on all cylinders, as you would expect him to be. It's basically a cop versus – cop trying to track down a serial killer.
It's like a
killer.
Buddy cop.
Yeah, buddy cop movie trying to track down a serial killer. And this is no – you know, there's no secret. The serial killer happens to be an alien who looks like Venom. Cross between Venom and and you know the alien shit. Aliens from the movie Aliens or whatever. But it's pretty great, man. The dialogue on this movie is pretty fantastic. The buddy cop dynamic. I mean, it's a goofy as shit movie. It takes place in the near future where all the polar ice caps have melted and there's just water everywhere. Everything's flooded. It's always raining, I don't know. This is a low budget, but you got to think like having all that water had to suck in the filming of this film.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but I mean, the way the movie looks and feels, like, you know, it's nice to actually see, you know, an HD copy of this because the cinematography has always been like, I always thought it was great. And the same thing with Tony Malam's The Burning. Yeah. I think The Burning looks fucking fantastic as a slasher film. It's really well done. It's really well shot. You know, the camera work is really great. And I think that's the same thing with Split Second, especially towards the last like 15, 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just love how wet it looks. It's like if you took The Crow and like Dark City together.
Yeah.
You know, it has that gothic, like, you know, that gothic feel. I just always kind of dug that.
Yeah, Blade Runner, I guess, had the same
thing. Yeah, and also it has this futuristic feel to it, too.
Yeah,
yeah, Blade Runner, it's like all those like neo-noir, techno-noir, like sci-fi thrillers have that type of look. Like everything, it's always wet, like Total Recall.
Yeah.
You know, everything's wet. I don't know if you'd call it neo-noir, but anyways. Yeah, I think his cinematography is always great. The dialogue is fun. The chemistry between, you know, Kim Cattrall and Rutger Hauer are really great. You know, he plays Stone, yeah. Rutger Hauer.
Harley Stone.
And then Dick is his Dick Durkin. You know, gotta love that alliteration with that character. You know, Dick Durkin's great. He turns out to be, you know, kind of a, you know, a tie and, you know, suit cop versus, you know, which is kind of like this vigilante cop and soon turns to I'm with you, Stone. Let's fuck this guy up. You know, yeah. I just love that dynamic between these characters.
It's pretty great, man. I mean,
it's a one liner movie too, which I fucking just love.
Yeah. You don't get very many movies like this. I mean, this is like early 90s, you know, you'd gone through the 80s, and there's a certain appeal these movies have that even though they're lower budget, there's like a almost a confidence to these types of films that they're just like they know what they are, and they're fun. I mean, the alien may not look incredible or whatever, like it looks good enough for what it's in, but it's like,
well, it's also hidden, you know. It was one of those things where I mean, probably due to budgetary constraints, you know, they hid the alien, but I like kind of the, you know, secrecy of showing the killer alien, because like it's an alien, but also at the same time it has this very humanistic serial killer side. You know, I really, really dig that.
There's one scene I love when I think it's on top of a subway car where its claws come up through the come up.
Oh, and it starts and it just runs, dude.
Oh man, that scene is so fucking awesome. Cool. Such a cool scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing. Is like it's one of those movies, and I compare. I think I even text you about it. It's very comparable to I Come in Peace.
Yeah, it would make a great double feature with that.
Sure. It's like one of these movies that it's just scene after scene of just fun.
Yeah,
like, you know, it's, you know, it might not be the most coherent story or something that's really well written, story wise, but between dialogue and action sequences, like this is like some of the best like buddy cop, like insane sci-fi horror movies there are. I mean, because we have our buddy cop movies that are great, like Lethal Weapon, obviously. But this is like Lethal Weapon in a horror aspect. You know, that's, I always looked at those movies, and I've always really liked it. And I love the fucking guns. You know, it's the same thing with, you know, I Come in Peace. The guns are fucking great. The weapons are great. The characters are fantastic. You know, even have that kind of the same dynamic of them chasing an alien.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's a great double feature. And, I think they're both wonderful looking movies. And, you know, it's a staple of my childhood, these two movies, and especially Split Second. Because I saw Split Second because my mom actually told me to watch it. You know, I think she caught it like on HBO or rented it or something like that when, you know, she like was up late and then she was like, Brad, you gotta see this movie. And in a TV guide back in the day, you could like flip to the back and it had the movies alphabetically and when they're going to play. And she like looked it up and she saw Split Second. She's like, hey, it's going to be on like on Monday at like 8 PM. Let's watch it. And that's my first like, you know, experience of, you know, Split Second is my mom, you know, nice. Telling me to watch a movie, which is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
And staying up late with her watching this alien flick. This, you know, she loved that type of shit. So yeah, that movie's pretty special to me.
I think it's pretty affordable, through Amazon UK.
Yeah, it also has cult classic collection in Germany released it. I got for like $6, I think it was. So
yeah, it's pretty affordable. I mean, these are they're bare bones, of course, but this is the only way you can actually see it in HD. It's not streaming anywhere. It's not, you know.
No, it's I think the DVD is pretty unavailable too. I think it's that pretty high up there.
Yeah,
yeah, and I think 101 Films released it, Cult Classic Collections, and there's one more that did it.
I was thinking that's at
because 101
point,
is UK.
Yeah, I was thinking it would be getting domestic classics Germany at some point, but
I don't know, man. We still haven't even had the Hitcher on the original Hitcher.
We need Split Second domestic release. We also need No Escape, man. With
that's the thing. Ray Liotta. That's all those fucking HBO. And the same thing with Full Eclipse. Mm. I think it's another HBO title.
Yeah, but someone needs to get on that and release these somewhere. I don't care where. If it's a Region B thing,
I don't
especially
even like,
No Escape.
You know, we always hear about Lionsgate and shit like that, which we'll talk about probably in a minute. But like, you know what? No one talks about HBO, about the rights. I mean, obviously HBO is, you know, high up there, but you know, no one ever mentioned like if it's, you know, it's something maybe we could tweet to like Arrow or something if they've attempted. I mean, obviously they probably attempted, but you know, is it like Lionsgate where they're just very like, you know, they don't even respond to licensing out their films.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? All right. And then moving along here. So let's see here. I think I got one more. Oh, I finally watched Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight. Mm. And I fucking loved it.
It's amazing.
I loved it so much. I don't know. Like, I've seen like kind of split reactions to Tarantino films, especially the last few, I think. Even with Death Proof, which I loved Death Proof.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm with you.
I mean, Grindhouse as a whole, I loved it. I saw it in the theater and I had a blast. So The Hateful Eight, you know, Tarantino's spin on a Western, and I don't know what people are expecting. Like, you've seen enough Tarantino films by now, you know that the most of the plot, a majority of it, is going to be driven through dialogue. With the exception probably of Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown. Most everything else is, you know, scenes of just dialogue playing out, bringing the plot.
With the exception?
Pulp Fiction is more of an, and it has more than just the dialogue. I think that one Brown is the most straightforward Tarantino's ever been with the film. But no, Pulp Fiction still has its bouts of dialogue. But I'm saying, you know, mostly, you know, like Reservoir Dogs is very much dialogue. Inglourious Bastards, maybe not so much. I don't know. I'm just used to when I see Tarantino, I know that there's going to be long stretches of just dialogue of these characters kind of feeling each other.
See, I'm the other way around. I think that Pulp Fiction is very because his most biggest action movie to me would be Kill Bill. Because I think that has the perfect blend of dialogue and action. See, I think all of Pulp Fiction, like to me, Pulp Fiction is probably, you know, next to Kill Bill and Death Proof. I mean, it's hard for me to pick a favorite Tarantino movie. It's like impossible. You like say name an order and it's like, I don't know how. you know,
just the way he presents film, I guess. I mean, what I'm getting at is, you know, by now we're.
It should be expected.
You should be expecting what a Tarantino film is going to be like. And I don't know what people were expecting, because people are like, oh, Hateful Eight was boring. Oh, man, too much talking. And it's just the lesser of the tale of the Tarantino films. And I was riveted for the full, 2.5 hours?
Yeah, something like that.
And I'm kicking myself for not seeing this thing on a big screen, because the cinematography, especially in the opening of the film, with the vast western snowy vista, you know, is just incredible. And the shots of the horses on the stagecoach is just amazing. And even in when they get to where they're going, and you know, it turns into more of a one location film, like even the cinematography in there and the use of the camera, and it's a great film. There's so much going on in each scene that it almost, you know, I wish I would have seen this in, especially the 70mm Roadshow, but
I did.
I know, lucky bastard. But it is fantastic, man. I loved it so much. I can't wait to watch it again, because I know watching it a second time is going to reveal so much more because of things you find out as the movie moves along. Sam Jackson, man.
Yeah, it's probably Tour de Force.
Love his role in it. I love Kurt Russell in a Western. Like, he just, the way he plays Western characters is fantastic. And, you know, it's great. I don't know. If you hated it, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. You know, I mean, with this and The Revenant, I feel like, you know, The Revenant was kind of an easy target because the filmmakers were just saying, oh, it's so hard to make the film, blah, blah, blah. You know, that set them up. But as a film itself, if you judge it, the film itself, that movie's incredible. An incredible piece of filmmaking. And then The Hateful Eight, you got, you know, 2015 with just those two films was pretty kick ass. So I wish I would have seen both those films on the big screen for sure. So, but I loved Hateful Eight, man. The Blu-ray had like hardly anything as far as special features go, which is a shame. But I think Tarantino
doesn't do special features.
Yeah, I think he brushes that aside.
He doesn't even do commentaries.
Nah.
So, no, yeah, I mean, it's expected.
Yeah.
I think he doesn't want that. I mean, I think that he's kind of against that.
Yeah, which is fine. And he can do whatever the hell he wants as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I have no complaints. Just make good movies, and he obviously does.
Yep. So that's what I was watching. That's what I what arrived on my doorstep.
Cool. I'll blow through mine. Mine's fairly quick. I haven't watched that much. Well, I've watched a lot, but I can only speak on behalf of a few. I'll start off with a bang. I watched Jim Warnowski's Shark and Saul Women's Prison Massacre.
Oof.
And then I watched... dude, it's... Yeah,
is it pretty much really what I'm expecting it to be?
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's. I mean, if anybody knows Jim and his movies, if you just watch his documentary, which is fucking fantastic, the Papatopoulos.
Yeah, great.
I mean, he films a movie in 3 days. He is wants titties and blood and everything to go right, and he doesn't really give a fuck anymore. And it's pretty much how Shark and Saul. Like, I want to even say that I liked it, but I can't like something like this. It's just it's just too much for me. I can't get into that. I mean, I can't really get into CGI sharks on land. That's weird. And then I watched fucking fantastic. I know I texted you a couple times. I watched this movie called Emily. It's by, I think Dark Skies is, the ones that released it. It recently was released on Blu-ray a couple Tuesdays ago I think actually this past Tuesday, I think it was released. I've watched a lot of babysitter movies, and this is by far one of the better ones. This movie is going to be very offensive to certain people. It is fucked up. There is one scene, so the home movie, I'm just going to call it the home movie scene. The home movie scene is fucking disturbing. Like, I'm watching it and I'm like, man, I'm fucking uncomfortable. Because the plot is that you have this kind of odd opening to these characters. And then we soon jump into this father picking up this babysitter. And he takes her to the house, introduces her to the kids. You know, she comes highly recommended. She has her own, you know, Facebook page for babysitting. And she gets to the house, you know, kids like her and everything. But as soon as the parents leave, she's kind of a bitch. And she has the kids do things and they can do kind of whatever they want. You know, and she's just not a very good babysitter. And it just gets worse and worse and worse until, like, it kind of – you get into the story. But it's just the things, like – I mean, the kids are probably between – I would say the oldest is maybe, like, 11. The next is probably, like, 7. And then you have kind of like a 4-year-old. And, man – I tell you, dude, like, I don't even think the kids would probably be able to watch the movie after, you know, like, these kids make this movie and they're not allowed to even watch it.
Well, I think that happens.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I mean, it's like the whole story of, you know, the kid that played Danny Torrance. He was told The Shining was a family drama, you know, and he didn't know it was a horror film until he was way older.
That's incredible.
You know, because they hit it. From him. I mean, this is not even comparable to the Shining. I mean, there's some really kind of, I would say horrific. I'm not being a pansy, but when it comes to kids, it's a different caliber of a movie. And, you know, what these kids are being exposed to and shit, it's just like, I mean, there's a few scenes, I mean, just really awful and mean-spirited shit. But it's fucking fantastic. It's a really good movie. I was really impressed by it. I mean, with a lot of these, you know, titles that come out, like kind of these direct-to-video stuff that just kind of show up out of nowhere, you know, you always watch them and you hope for the best. And most of the time you don't get the greatest movie. So it's really, really, refreshing to see such a, you know, something different, because I don't have seen too many movies where they're this mean and kind of go these steps. Wow. You know, it's not like we're fucking watching a Serbian film or fucking American Guinea Pig or something like that. No, like this is like could happen type of shit. That's what's scary about it and kind of more evil. And I think that's pretty much it.
Okay.
That was quick for me.
Nice. All right. We're going to jump in the news in just a second, but before we do that with Josh, Brad, since you were the one that kind of spearheaded the Lionsgate thing.
Oh, yeah.
We need to talk about Lionsgate.
Yes, probably as you already know through our Twitter and Facebook, because our link blew up, kind of.
Yeah.
I know from, you know, from Jay, because a lot of this stems from Jay Hawkinson a couple years ago. I know that he was at this horror fest. Jim was there. They screened, you know, a 4K scan of Chopping Mall. They said it looked great. He said he's working with Lionsgate, and that was the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was friends with Jim on Facebook, and I saw a post where he said he was heading to Lionsgate, you know, the next day.
Yeah.
Wish him luck. And I was like, holy shit. Like, this is it. This is, you know, this might be happening. So I sent it to Josh and I'm like, dude, I was like, you need to write this up right away because this is huge, you know, because if he actually gets this, like, that's going to, I said it's going to open floodgates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to either be open for licensing for companies or Lionsgate is actually going to do their own line of horror, you know, kind of this resurgence of horror, what's very much what they did on DVD.
Right.
You know, they have a ton of titles on DVD, but they're mostly all out of print. So, you know, we posted it and shared it. And then the following day, Jim said the deal's solid, expected during the summer. And I was like, what the fuck?
Chopping Mall in HD on Blu-ray, dude.
Yeah, so apparently that is true, according to Jim Warnowski, but he also said in a comment on his Facebook page that he didn't want to let the cat out of the bag, but Chopping Mall is going to be one of the first kind of rounds or batch to putting some older films from Vault titles, I think he said, to quote him, Vault titles on Blu-ray.
Yeah,
so,
he said they're actually, as of now, they are going through their vaults to decide what they're going to release as a part of this. Did they have a name for it or something?
I think some names have been thrown around. I'm not sure what
they did. This is all very much just from Jim. Like, we haven't had an official announcement from Lionsgate yet.
Nothing by Lionsgate. But I expect them to do exactly what they did with the Lost Collection that they did a few years ago. And, I mean, they literally went through their entire but they went through a big portion of their catalog and released stuff on DVD. I mean, we had Slaughter High on DVD. We had, Class of 1999. We had Alligator. We had Chopping Mall. I mean, I go on a long list of titles that they released on DVD, but all those eventually made it. Obviously we're probably going to get some HD masters, so we're going to get what's on Vudu, but at least with our physical media people, they will actually have a copy, because I know it's really hard to sell people on digital.
Well, when your internet goes down, what the hell are you supposed to do?
Right. And the thing is like, even when you put on that Vudu HDX, it still doesn't sound or look.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. It all depends.
It doesn't shake. Yeah. You almost have to have the most perfect setup in order to amplify the sound that they put out, because it just doesn't do that. It's just not the same.
Yeah.
But anyways, so hopefully, we'll get an announcement or something. I mean, summer, that's now. I mean, that's like in 2-3 months. So
he's done all the heavy lifting for them. All they have to do is basically master the disc.
Yeah. So it sounds like that they might already have something pressing or pressed, and they just haven't announced it yet. So my guess is that they're going to go through waves. They are going to release a few titles, and say 6 titles here or there, and see how they do. And if they do well, then they'll probably keep it up.
Yeah.
Because I think as a company, they can look back and see what everybody else is doing, and at least there's money in it.
Mm-hmm.
And with Lionsgate, they actually have the upper hand because they can put it out in stores everywhere, which a lot of these other companies can't. So they have the, we're going to be able to probably go to Best Buy and Chopping Mall is going to be on the shelf, which is pretty fucking cool. So, we'll see.
Class of 99 in HD. What do you think? It's going to happen.
There's no HD master of that. Don't play around with me.
Damn it. There's none? Really?
Nope. It made it on Blu-ray, and I think it was Germany, but there's no subs, and it's pretty much the DVD.
Oh, okay.
Because I bought it just to see what it looked like, and it looks exactly the same.
That sucks.
But anyways, hopefully, because I mean, there's a lot of titles that never made it to DVD. And so hopefully we will get some, maybe Girlfriend from Hell or something like that. That'd be cool.
Gothic?
I'm fucking, dude, Lionsgate, if you're listening, just let me do it. I will literally make you billions of dollars. I know your fucking catalog. I don't even need to go through your vaults. I know what you fucking have. So let me tell you, 6 titles, and I'll make you $1 million.
There you go.
In a week.
Offers on the table, Lionsgate.
I'll make you $10 million in a month.
There you go.
Not really. There's some sales. But I don't know. If they play their cards right, I think they could really, decent price, that's the cool thing. It's going to be decent prices.
Yeah.
We're not going to be looking at $29.95 Code Red Blu-rays. We're going to be looking at probably like fucking $8.99, $12.99, maybe $19.99 at highest cost of Blu-rays. Because look at their fucking DVDs. Like the stuff that The Witch is coming out like at what, $12.99 or something like that? Like they have really low prices unless it's one of their bigger titles, but they're always on sale. So, I mean, that's going to be so fucking cool for horror fans. Like I really hope, and fucking people buy this shit. Even if you don't like the movie, buy it because you're going to, Lionsgate.
This is the greater good, people.
Yeah, because the reason why they stopped putting out those Lost Collections is because no one was fucking buying them.
Yeah.
Like, they released, I think, 8 titles on that Lost Collection. It was movies that were, really hard to find. Slaughter High was one of them. Morgan Stewart's Coming Home was another one. You know, they put those out on DVD and no one fucking bought them. Well, it's time to actually do something, because if you purchase, they will see, they'll see the sales, and then they'll be like, man, this is a really good idea. This is extra money in our pocket. You know, what fucking company doesn't like money? So hopefully it happens. I have high hopes. I have my eyes open, and you guys will not hear the end of it. Like, I will promote that to the bitter end, because if you're a fucking nut like me, you know exactly what they have, and it's a lot. Like, I mean, these people bought out Vestron. They bought out Lightning. I mean, every fucking little label that you see at the top of your VHS – usually that probably was purchased by Lionsgate. I mean, we have Live Entertainment was purchased by them, Trimark. I mean, these people have so much shit. Like, it's fucking sickening. Like, if you think we have a lot of horror movies now, wait until Lionsgate comes out. It's going to be insane.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even think of fucking Vidmark and IVE they have. Like, it's just, like, it's so much. Nice. So anyways, all right.
Right on. All right, well, let's jump into the news with Josh Obershaw, and we'll be right back talking about Vinegar Syndrome. All right, Josh Obershaw joins us for the news. What's up, Josh?
What's up, Sean?
I'm doing well. All right, so me and Brad just discussed the Lionsgate thing, so we can lead off with that quickly with Lionsgate, and then we'll jump into all the other shit that went down.
Yeah, and there's a lot of shit that went down this week, and I was struggling to keep up this week. So, yeah, just really quickly, Lionsgate is going to be releasing a Blu-ray of Chopping Mall, so that's going to be exciting stuff, and... according to Wynorski, they're already searching through their vaults for more 80s titles to give the Blu-ray treatment. So that's going to be fun. And I'm going to actually going to write up a little wish list of kind of the movies that I would like to see get a Blu-ray treatment from Lionsgate, because I know a lot of people have been waiting for some titles. So, yeah, that'll be coming soon. And then that will lead into – I'll open up the discussion on the message boards asking folks, what do you want to see Lionsgate put out on Blu-ray? So, yeah, there's that. It was kind of hard to try to find a comprehensive list or a go-to place where I can look at.
And I don't think there is one. I think it's all kind of like, well, shoot, why hasn't that movie been released? You know, why hasn't that one sequel or whatever been released? Or that one movie that I remember, the VHS cover, most of the time it's possibly, you know, most likely it's going to be a Lionsgate has it.
We got a picture sent to us at the Texas Frightmare. Someone had visited the Severn booth, and they snapped a picture of their upcoming slate for the rest of the year. And there's some cool titles, man. I'm just going to run down a few of them. I already talked about Burial Ground, and I already mentioned Beyond the Darkness. 88 Films are going to be releasing that. But they've also got Dr. Butcher, MD, a.k.a. Zombie Holocaust. Let's see, The Other Hell, Christina, Lady Libertine / Love Circles, Eaten Alive, which is not the Tobey Hooper movie. This is the 1980 film directed by Umberto Lenzi, who of course directed Cannibal Ferox. What else I got? The Devil's Honey, Kung Fu Trailers of Fury Volume 2, and this is the one I'm excited for, Anthropophagus.
Yes,
so Anthropophagus is
films one.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that before. You said it looks pretty good, right?
I haven't cracked it open yet.
Oh, okay. My bad. Anyways, that's going to be the Severn slate. Moving right along, there's a lot. I just want to mention this really quick. La La Land Records has just re-released the 2-CD complete score to John Carpenter's Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, nice.
They had previously released this in 2009, but it quickly went out of print, so... if you missed out on that, here's your chance to go get it. Go to La La Land Records and get this one. It's limited to 3,000 copies. This is a 30th anniversary limited edition, and it's pretty much identical to the one that came out in 2009, except it's got new liner notes from film music writer Jeff Bond and a reversible cover with new art by Jim Titus. Next up, we've got the final list of extras for Just Desserts, The Making of Creepshow. Excuse me. This is going to be put out by Synapse, and we have a release date as well, July 12th. Now, the extras, it'll be presented in 1080p HD with the 1.78 widescreen. The extras are a commentary by director and editor Michael Felscher, a commentary with actor John Amplis, property master Bruce Allen Miller, and makeup effects assistant Daryl Ferrucci, followed by Creepshow Days, an interview with director of photography Michael Gornick, some extended interview segments with George Romero, Tom Savini, and Bernie Wrightson, a behind-the-scenes compilation of on-set video footage from Tom Savini, an episode of Horror's Hallowed Grounds with Sean Clark, and this is actually a bonus feature that I mentioned previously, Scream Greats Volume 1, Tom Savini, Master of Horror Effects, and this one includes an optional commentary by Savini. But in addition to that, there's also a vintage 1982 Evening Magazine segment, which was shot on the set of the film, featuring rare cast and crew interviews.
Wow.
And lastly, there's a behind-the-scenes of Creepshow photo gallery. Some couple other quick titles I want to mention. Psychomania from 1973. That's coming out on Blu-ray from British Film Institute. So this is actually going to be a British DVD, Blu-ray. That comes out on September 19th. This was previously put out by Severin in 2010. And the BFI is also going to be releasing Ken Russell's Women in Love, starring Oliver Reed, also on September 19th. Do you remember me mentioning on the site that Code Red were going to be releasing 2019 After the Fall of New York?
Yes.
Guess what? 88 Films are releasing that too.
Of course.
The fun never stops with these two, am I right?
Yeah.
But 88 Films did say that it's going to be digitally restored and it's going to be presented in its original scope aspect ratio for the first time ever. There's no date or extras to report at this time. But yeah, that's 2019. From Screen Factory, we've got Session 9 starring David Caruso. This one's coming out August 16th. And excuse me, still getting a little choked up here.
It's emotional. I know. Extras,
I know, there's so much. It's so beautiful. The extras are still in progress for this one. But yeah, August 16th, Session 9. Plus, this is the one I'm really, really excited for. Invasion of the Body Snatchers from 1978. Scream Factory are releasing a collector's edition of this one. It comes out August 2nd. Now, as far as extras, quote, specs and extras, both new and existing, will be announced sometime in June. So stay tuned for news on that one.
Yeah, I have the Blu-ray of this already. You know, it's just like, I think a bare bones one or something like that. But I don't think it looked that good. So I think I'm hoping that they do a, you know, restoration on it or something like that. So I mean,
I hope so too.
I'm waiting to see what the specs are before I really bite down on this one. I mean, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, that release, because I already own the Blu-ray of that one. I double dipped because they did such a great job, you know. So I'm hoping they do the same kind of treatment for this. And lately, I feel like they've kind of been stepping up their game with their collector's editions. So keep my fingers crossed.
Sure, sounds like it. Well, we already know that the Screen Factory art is better than the one that Fox put out.
Yes.
Because I've seen what that looks like, and I'm not a fan.
Nah, it's not good.
All right. So, I got some new stuff to report. Since we're on the subject of Shout Factory, it looks like Shout Factory are having another sort of what you would call like a sub-label, mm-hmm. kind of like Scream Factory. This one's called Shout Select. And they're going to be releasing a lot of cult classics and fan favorites that aren't necessarily horror, but some are genre, some are not, but they're going to be fan favorites that people have been clamoring to want on Blu-ray. And the big one, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Finally.
And I just bought the Arrow one.
I know. Oh, really?
Yeah, I just got it in the mail like last week. This is pretty funny that now we're getting a domestic. So, but yeah, so I'm excited to see, you know, what Shout Factory brings to the table with this one, and I'll probably end up buying it too.
From the sound of it, it's gonna be huge. I mean, it's going to be packed. I mean, they already said it's going to be two discs at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the MGM DVD had a lot of stuff on it. I can't remember all of them at this moment, but yeah, it's going to be a good one. There's already going to be a comprehensive retrospective. Who knows how long that's going to be and how much space that's going to take.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, this one comes out August 16th, by the way. And also, the art looks incredible.
That's great.
You can pre-order that one. They also announced John Carpenter's Elvis. That also comes out on August 16th. So there's another John Carpenter title to add to the pile. And details are pretty minimal right now for these two because they're just titles that are announced. There's nothing else to them. But there is going to be a collector's edition of 1989's Roadhouse.
Hmm.
I know there's a lot of fans out there for Roadhouse, so I'll let you know what the extras are going to be for that one. And the most triumphant news, of course, is Bill and Ted's Most Excellent Collection. It's going to be a 3-disc set. Unfortunately, I don't have any other news for you regards to this title, but this is going to be a good one.
I just bought Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure on Blu-ray, of course, too. So maybe that's what I got to do, just finally buy things, and then they'll get deluxe releases.
Well, especially when it comes to like MGM titles. I avoid getting those until I know for sure that, you know, somebody like Shout Factory are going to be putting them out again, because it just seems like that's an inevitability now.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's all the news I have, Sean.
All right, man. Cool. Thank you very much.
No problem. We'll see you guys next week.
All right. Vinegar Syndrome has let their April package out into the world. They've unzipped their giant fly and whipped it out.
That is true.
So,
and we're here to talk about it.
We're going to talk about it. We got our homework a couple weeks back, and we have done our homework. So Dolomite got the Blu-ray, finally a Blu-ray release. Trashy Lady got a Blu-ray release. Then Unveiled and All Night at the Pono got DVD releases. So what we're going to do is we're going to get the naughty bits out of the way, because
there's a lot.
So here we go. Where do we even start?
I don't know. Let's start with Trashy Lady.
Okay. I mean, like I said last time we covered these, like, this is very much out of my comfort zone. Like, when I want to sit down and relax and watch something, I really, the last thing I want to watch is strangers fucking.
Hey, it's Ginger Lynn. She's not a stranger. Herschel Savage and Harry Reams? Come on.
I guess. I mean, if you've seen these, they are not strangers. But it's a little bit, for me, it's in a weird way, it's like, it is like, oh God, I gotta watch these.
Yeah.
Just being honest, you know what I mean? It's not when I seek out entertainment, it's not what I seek out. And especially with the hardcore stuff, it's just almost too explicit. Like, I like Tinto Brass, like.
You like sexploitation.
I like sexploitation and a little bit of like more of the softcore erotic. Like, if there's a story and the story lends itself to more adult situations, that's what I'll watch. Like, Tinto Brass's Black Angel, which is also known as Senso 45, like, that is a fantastic film with some sex in it, but it's there's a reason for it, you know, and it's very much this relationship in this wartime setting, you know. So it's that and Salon Kitty, you know, things like that are right up my alley. But Trashy Lady, it's an X-rated film, directed by Steve Scott, starring Ginger Lynn, Harry Reams, Herschel Savage, Amber Lynn, Carolot, Bunny Blue, and Tom Byron. And I was kind of excited about this one because it takes place in like the 1940s. So it's like, oh, wow, we got this like 1940s, you know, sexy time film that won awards, apparently, for cinematography and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, okay, this might be something. So unfortunately, it wasn't in the vein of like Corruption or Sex World. It was pretty much just a porno.
Yeah, I was this is a first for me. I always heard about the film because it was Ginger Lynn, of course. She was in it. And this was,
I mean, she's beautiful.
Yeah, I think it's one of her one of her first films. And I remember reading about it on Vinegar Syndrome website. They had, Bill Marigold do auto commentary, which he's kind of, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have probably most of the porn we do. But, I was really excited to see kind of, what this is like, maybe set in the 40s or something. Mm-hmm. I was expecting, sets and stuff like that. And I knew it was very popular and, it's just everything was like filmed in a corner and set dressings were, like a desk. And they spent money on some costumes and maybe some car rentals because there's
great.
Yeah, but it's just very bland. There's not really a story to it other than turning an innocent girl into a trashy lady. Mm-hmm. That's basically it. And all the performances are fairly dull. Like no one's really likable or funny. It's just maybe it just wasn't for me because I know that this film is loved by mm-hmm. a lot of people. It did really well. I just this is one of the first. I was really excited about it. I just I was like, yeah, there was reasons why I couldn't get into it different from you, but I was just, I don't know, it was just like every time that we started talking, someone's mouth opened and a dick was shoved in it rather than actually, actually having any dialogue. Obviously it will do well because it's definitely one of those awaited films, I think, for a lot of collectors and people that enjoy, pornographic cinema. I don't know, that's the very first time I've ever probably said that I wasn't the biggest fan of pornos from Vinegar Syndrome. I don't know, it just didn't hit me right. And this is, I don't know, that's not bad out of over 120 releases. So, but anyway,
it's a pretty good average. I mean, but this thing,
it looks great. I mean, I actually didn't dive into the commentaries. They actually have two different commentary tracks, and I probably will listen to Bill Marigold because I think he's fucking hilarious. He's a very smart guy.
I'm very much interested in checking out the commentaries. Maybe if I put something over the screen and just listen to the commentary or something. But I'm very interested in just. Because this is, this type of cinema is something I never really explored, never really had the desire to. I mean, so for me, this is all kind of new. But as a lover of film and cinema, I'm always interested in, the behind the scenes, and to have like a commentary. There's two commentaries, for a film like this. It's like what. I couldn't imagine. I mean, I guess if you act in these films, it's all whatever. But sitting down and just watching yourself have sex and comment on it as the film's going along is.
Well, I mean, this is really funny. I mean, the Herschel Savage is on it, and I mean, he's still alive and well, and I think he probably still makes porno. I'm not 100% sure, but they have the director of photography, which, I know that Trashy Lady's known for its cinematography, but honestly, it's not that good to me. Like, there's nothing other than, you have people in costumes and you put them in a dark corner and you film. Like, I just don't know. It just didn't grab me. Like, I expected to be, like, kind of blown away by the cinematography.
He knows how to light penises.
Well, I was expecting, like, something like Corruption. Corruption looks beautiful.
Yeah.
It's nightmarish. It's gorgeous at the same time. I don't know. Maybe I was expecting too much.
Right.
I think I look at as if Vinegar Syndrome is going to put a pornographic film on Blu-ray, there's something more special about it. Maybe that's the mindset I'm in. Because coming from their other titles that have been put on Blu-ray that are pornographic titles, most of them are really worth it and they look great. and there's something special. This one just didn't hit me the same way as those did. So.
I mean, I think Ginger Lynn's pretty much the biggest thing going for it, and the costumes, of course. But you know, here's what I was thinking of today, and it's a weird comparison. But I mean, I grew up being forced to watch like Christian movies and Christian music. It's like the porn industry is like almost the opposite end of the spectrum, but it's the same type of dynamics going on where they're all lower budget, and the money's not going in the script or the you know, the filmmaking itself, and they're just getting something done. They know what their audience wants. In this case, you know, audience wants to see beautiful people having sex, you know, and it's that, and that's how I look at the porn industry, because I actually worked in the Christian music industry, and then I've seen how the Christian film industry is. It's like it's almost the same thing, but with fucking instead.
Replace Jesus with fucking.
Right. But I mean, I guarantee you the porn industry makes way more money than they should. Well, yeah. I don't know. They both kind of have their self-contained audiences.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely money in it, but I mean, yeah. You're talking billions and billions of dollar industry. I mean, nowadays, I mean, but I think it was even just as successful back then.
Oh yeah, and that's the thing. Like when I watched that sexploitation documentary that Severin put out, I mean, you know, this stuff, you know, sexploitation films that always has been a moneymaker since, you know, for the longest time. Like people have been interested in sexuality as entertainment, and it is a fascinating subject. Something that I'm kind of as a someone who likes. History and entertainment. It's a fascinating subject that I don't think I've really dived into as much as I would want to, but like this type of stuff makes me want to kind of look into that even further, just from the behind the scenes aspect for sure. But yeah, this as a film, like it's, you know, it's an 80s porno.
Yeah. So.
So I'd be interested. I mean, if any of you, you know, get these and have a different opinion, I would love to hear it, you know, or if this is something that you've been waiting for and
maybe I missed
and
something.
Had seen before, like, you know, it's just funny. I mean, I never thought we'd have, I mean, we started this podcast just like we're going to talk, you know, mostly genre and horror, but it's funny that we're having at least once a month, we're bringing up, you know, adult films, but, you know, as opposed to wanting to see like a film like this, I'm more interested in the, you know, I guess the making of aspect of this whole, you know, that whole industry. The whole industry has always been fascinating to me, just because I'm not drawn to it at all. But it's just fascinating how much of a moneymaker it is, and how it's changed, you know, every decade.
Yep.
So, all right. So that was Trashy Lady. I mean, for a Blu-ray, I mean, Vinegar Syndrome stuff always looks great as far as how it looks. And the fact that they actually put special features on a movie like this, to me, is, you know.
Special features on anything. I mean, it's definitely got to be a little difficult to even find some of these people.
Yeah. All right. Moving along to the DVD of Unveiled. This is a 1986 adult film.
Yes. 75 minutes, but I wish it was 175.
I'll let you set this one up, Brad.
I really, really, really liked Unveiled.
All I know is there's a crazy masked ball. That's how it ends in the last part of the movie. It just gets insanity.
Oh yeah. There's definitely a huge orgy. but Unveiled is, this is very comparable to kind of 80s sex comedies with just fucking. And that's what I really liked about it. Very much like Bob Chin's Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls. It feels like a sex comedy, but fucking with the side, actual like penetration. Cause I mean, obviously there's fucking in those movies. But Unveiled was really, really fun because the dialogue and plot is so absurd. And the dialogue had me cracking up. It's basically these two guys who are bored with their wives, and they're both fucking around on the side. they get together to hang out, and then they discuss downstairs that they're going to switch. Well, actually, they're having a drink at a bar, and he's like, "Hey, you know, your wife's a fox, man." He's like, "Really? She's actually not that great, but your wife, on the other hand, wow, man, she's really fucking hot." And so basically it's like, "Hey, how about if we swap wives?" And he's like, "You know, we can't do that." And he's like, "Well, when they're in bed, we'll just sneak into each other's bedroom when we're hanging out. And then you fuck my wife, I'll fuck yours." So they do that. And then, you know, he's talking to his wife and she's like, "Oh, baby, you were so good last night. How'd you get so big? You know, you put it in my, you know, put it in my ass," and just all this stuff. And he gets upset. And then you know, it's just this kind of goofy thing where then they go to this mask ball and, you know, they have, you know, they play around and they kind of get their, you know, it's really funny because it's almost like the Superman thing when people are wearing their, when Superman's wearing his glasses, he's not Superman.
Right, right.
They have something like that in the movie that's really fucking funny. It's like, you know. But anyways, not that it would be very spoilery, but I still don't want to give it away because it is pretty funny. But just the dialogue alone in this movie, there's obviously a lot of sexy time, and you know, it's actually not that bad. But the highlight of this movie is the banter between the two leads.
Yeah,
definitely something definitely worth it if you enjoy these types of movies. The dialogue alone is top notch for a pornographic film, like exactly what you want to hear, where it's like, it's just pure comedy and just the delivery and kind of the cheese ball, lines that they say and just goofy shit. It's totally worth it 100%. So I was actually, you know, this is a nice little surprise because, you know, sometimes we get the really serious pornos, and then sometimes we just get kind of laugh out loud, just goofy pornos. And that's the type of stuff that I like. I like to laugh at the kind of the almost situational pornos.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a sitcom. It's a sitcom porn. Sit porn. There you go. Except it's 75 minutes, but definitely, you know, actually Susie Randall is, the director of it. So if you know, you know, her work, she's obviously been around for, you know, quite some time. And I don't know if, like, with these movies, I really want to know if, like, if, who writes these movies? You know, because you got to think that,
right,
you know,
yeah,
you have situations. It's like, hey, how about you have a clogged pipe under your sink and this guy comes in, he's going to unclog your pipes. You guys just go. And she's like, "Oh my God, I can't, my sink doesn't work. Your clocks are, you know, your pipes are clogged, baby. I got the perfect wrench for that." "Oh, you do? Yeah, here it is." You know, that's kind of what we're used to, but I mean, there's long sequences of dialogue with these characters, and I mean, it's like, if you write this, what could you do outside of the spectrum of making like a comedy? Because I feel like,
I mean, some of these people could be, you know, writing under assumed names for these films. You know,
it's
what I mean?
True. It's true. I mean, not that I think that fucking, you know, John Hughes wrote the fucking movie.
Well,
or
no,
something.
But I mean, Wes Craven did an adult
yeah.
film.
Yeah, it's true. Name. But it's just like one of those things where I would really like to see, you know, something come from this. Like, whoever wrote this actually maybe wrote a sex comedy from
right.
the 80s.
Right.
So I really think they could pull it off. But anyways, Susie Randall, she's been around for, I mean, she's a photographer for Playboy and stuff. And she, you know, became a director, and she's still around, man. She's like probably in her 70s or something.
Wow.
But yeah, she, I mean, she has her own website, and you can, I mean, she's very popular in the porn community. So, seeing this movie, you know, with her behind the camera, and it's always kind of different when you have female, directors. It's not too common, just like the horror industry. That's horror, by the way. you know, it's just, I don't know, there's a different aspect. And I think I kind of like how they really focus on kind of these dumbass guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's an enjoyable film. It was almost delightful at times. So, but anyways, I give Unveiled definitely 2 thumbs up. So.
Wow. All right. Moving along to this next set. Here we go. All Night at the Pono. 12-unit continuous show. You got All American Hustler, Carnal Go-Around, Succula, Homer the Late Comer. So the story with these is like this – this was like a kind of a storefront theaters, you know, that in LA that were operating in the early 70s, apparently. And I guess what they wanted to do with this release is kind of emulate the one day program, right?
Like they wanted to give you kind of a taste of what, because what they're referring to is when they say the storefront, you know, you had, you know, let's just say 42nd Street. You had, you know, these big theaters that would have lines down the street playing Deep Throat, and you had everybody from kids trying to sneak in to grandma to people on a date going to these theaters watching these, you know, pornographic films. Well, then you had a lot of these other theaters that would just run porn all day. And they were cheap. So sometimes these movies ran from 10 minutes, almost like a scene, to, you know, an hour. And it was almost like independent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, some of these films, no one knows who these people are. No one, there's no credits. There's no nothing. There's no director. There's absolutely complete, just anonymous. Everything is just anonymous. Because it's like these people would make these films like on, you know, 8mm, 16mm, develop them, and then sell them to these storefront porno theaters just to run. That's what researching it, that's kind of what it was like. So what they wanted to do, Vinegar Syndrome, they kind of, you know, you're right. They wanted to emulate kind of that feel like, hey, I go in, I'm horny at 7 p.m. I'm going to pay like $2 to go watch 12 hours of pornographic cinema in the theater. And that's exactly what it's like. It's basically a marathon, just like if you would do like a 12-hour horror marathon. You got a bunch of movies playing. Well, that's exactly what this is. But however, they just range from 5 minutes to an hour. You know, some of the films you may have heard of, you know, some faces might be popular, and there's just a lot of it's almost like you're watching it like amateur porn. That's what it would be like, huh. You know, nowadays, like people, you know, cause let's get a little nasty here for a second. There's a website called Clips for Sale where people can film their own porno in the privacy of their own home, put it online for $10 for people to download it. And they make money. That's kind of how this independent amateur amateur industry is, you know, independent industry is working. And it always has, but it's just different ways to make money from it. And back then, this is kind of what it was like. So I think a lot of these films, they don't have, when it starts, the movie just starts. There's no credits. It will open up with dialogue or a scene, and then it will say the end, and that's it. And even Vinegar Syndrome doesn't know who is in this. So you might be watching and might catch grandma on one of these movies. Who knows? So, you know, that's what I was looking for. I was looking for family members the whole time I was watching this movie or these movies. So there are 12 unit continuous shows. It is 12 hours because it is 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. The discs are amazing. Like this set, you open it up, you have what looks like old pornographic, you know, kind of just the stuff that you would see on the side of the street back in the 70s, where you would just have, you know, just promotional things for each theater telling what pornos are coming, what they're doing. Some of these titles were actually even films that Vinegar Syndrome has released, but the discs, they're not even labeled with the movies. It just says 7 p.m. to 11 p.m., 11 p.m. to 3 a.m., and 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. And you watch, like I said, everything from a five minute – actually, this says 12, but – they're not – there's more than 12. There's more than 12 movies.
Because yeah, because of all the shorts and stuff, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I don't see some of this stuff on here. So I'm not going to obviously go through all this because I don't even know if our listeners enjoy a lot of this stuff.
what were the highlights?
Let us know.
Away from this?
Well, I'll just cover it as a whole for the most part. I think this is definitely one of the most clever – things that Vinegar Syndrome has done, and one of the most enjoyable things, just because of the experience, because it really gives you that feel, because they found these prints from everywhere, like I said, 5 minutes to an hour of these films. I mean, we have, you know, I'll just run through them, like The Girl Acrobatics is I think one of the film I remember reading, like the girl that's in it is popular, but it's about this guy who just goes in, does a handstand, gets a blowjob. it's all simulated sex. Like there's no penetration, there's no nothing. It's like 4 minutes long. Super weird. Homer the Late Comer is super fucking weird. It is basically this huge chubby character. I don't even know if there's dialogue in the movie. I can't remember any. You see poop on buttholes in that one. That is super weird. Erotic Point of View is pretty interesting. There's it's a POV of a guy that's interviewing people and then ends up having sex with them. And it's not like Casting Couch. It almost feels like these people are real. It doesn't feel like it's set up all that much. Like, obviously, just say, hey, can I interview you and then watch you guys screw, or can I have sex with you? And it's like, yeah, sure. That's kind of what it's like. Orgy in the Woods, super weird. Everything's weird in this, by the way. So I'll stop saying weird. Orgy in the Woods, just sex. The Playboys was entertaining because John Holmes is in it, and he's very, very young. He has no beard, no mustache. It's basically just this guy banging girls and cheating on his girlfriend. Succula is definitely one of the highlights of this because George Flower, known as Buck Flower, who plays basically in every John Carpenter movie and always plays a drunk in every single movie he's in, he's in it. And this is actually directed by, I think it was Anthony Spinelli directed this one, I want to say. And Anthony Spinelli is the director of, like, Sex World and stuff like that. So Succula is a comedy, like this Dracula, obviously, comedy. George Buckflower narrates kind of in between segments. He is just super fucking funny. Like, he just says weird things. He kind of sets up scenes and just has a weird ending all around. The Big Snatch is one of the, just a roughie that's not very good. I can't remember some of the other ones now, but most of them, I mean, they're just very, it's exactly what you're going to get into. Like, you watch one, you kind of saw them all in that sense, but they're all from different, like, they're all from the 70s, like between, I think they said from 70 to 73, which is interesting because all the production values are extremely different. And most of them are shot, obviously, on 16 millimeter. Some are on 35. But it's just interesting to watch kind of something as horrible looking as Orgy in the Woods or Homer the Late Comer to see something as shot differently as something like Succula or they had All American Hustler, where they look completely different. So it's fun to watch the production values. Also just seeing this, it's almost like collaborative short films together from filmmakers of, you know, the pornographic area in the 70s, just putting everything together and just watching it straight. And I obviously didn't watch 12 hours straight.
You didn't do it. You didn't just pull it all out or just watch them all.
No. I went through them slowly. Some of them, sex scenes, obviously, some of these sex scenes are like 20 minutes long. And I fast forward through most of it because it's literally like 10 minutes just of an extremely up close, penetration scene. And it's like, I'm not getting anything from this at all. And it's frankly, it's wasting my time.
Exactly. That's how I deal with most of these.
the stuff in between is pretty interesting. Right. And I really think it's truly a great set. I don't know if this will necessarily sell well, but
it's such a cool idea, though. And they did go all out with the packaging is fantastic.
Yeah.
With the cardboard and you pull it out and there's, you got the three discs in there. And I mean, it's a really cool looking,
it's clever, it's interesting. It's definitely one of the most interesting, things that they have done.
I guess if you collect if you're into collecting oddities and things like that, this is definitely
one of them. This is super, like I've said, reiterated, like, and I've said it 1,000 times, it's weird. So I don't know how well this would sell if they continue to do this, but I would like to definitely see one from the 80s, like early 80s, just to see kind of the difference. Obviously they also did this because I'm sure that they have a shit ton of stuff laying around that they can't actually put out on disc, because how are you going to put a 5-minute, aerobic or acrobatic handstand blowjob movie out that's no penetration or money shot?
True.
What are you going to do with that? Unless I did put on exploitation.
Well, it seems like if they have so much in the vaults, we're probably going to see more of these. It's one of those things, that they might as well. So, cool, man.
Yeah, I highly recommend it if you're into weird shit. And let us know, too, about this, Vinegar. Because we like talking about it because personally, I do, because it's super weird. I know Sean is he's getting his feet wet in some of this stuff.
This is all scientific research, basically.
And we're getting in, I really want you to see something like a well-made. I wish we could have covered Corruption, basically.
I watched it. I talked about it on the show. But that one, that was like the first one, so that was kind of a shock. But even thinking back on it, I see the kind of, in a weird way, the value in it. And even Sex World, I think that one had something to say. And there's, I've been married, it'll be 12 years this year. So that actually had to think weird, kind of observations on marriage and a marriage relationship and, when you've been with someone a long time and everything, like there was like some clever things in that film that, you put everything else aside, there's something there, something tangible there, something that can connect with people and kind of be entertaining, and funny and shocking. So, so I've seen a couple, and I know that they're out there and it's just, I'm not against explicit stuff. I mean, like I said, I've been married 12 years. It's like, this stuff isn't a shock to me. But it's like when I sit down to watch a film, I'm like, I kind of want the film to get to a point. Like, what's the point of this? Let's get to it. I'm not,
You'll see.
I don't need to see like a 20 minute sex scene.
You'll
know what
see.
I mean?
So, you'll get there.
But
we'll catch something what we need to do so I can sell everybody on it again is we need to talk about The Telephone Book. By far my favorite release by Vinegar Syndrome. And I think you would really, really, really.
I need to watch that. I've almost bought it like 5 times.
Dude, just do it. Like, do it right now when you're on the show.
Okay. All right.
Just fucking buy it. Like, it's truly a work of fucking art as a sexploitation movie. It is fucking cute. It is funny. It is sexy. It is weird. It is super fucking raunchy. There's animation in it that's really bizarre. I mean, it's just, it's everything. It's truly one of the best things that I mean, it would hit my like top 10, I think, during like 2014 of like new films. And I think about it all the time and I show it to everybody I can. I'm just like, this is something truly special.
Yeah.
So it's like, I can't wait until you come across literally something like that.
We will see.
Puns, I mean, I just can't get enough puns during.
I'm show. Hopeful. Like I am hopeful. And
you'll get it.
So here's what I almost wanted to email them, and I'm gonna because I know the guys listen to the show sometimes. And they may be listening to this right now, but someone like me who loves Vinegar Syndrome but is not all about collecting the sexy time ones, but wants to get some sort of bundle. I would love, and I guess they're not doing. Hold on a second. Let me grab this. Look at real quick.
Grabbing what? Your dick?
I'm just grabbing this gigantic thing right here. No, if they had some sort of like a couple options for packages, right? For you have the standard, you know, Vinegar Syndrome package, which features basically one or two titles, either horror or, you know, exploitation, and then a couple sexy time ones. But if there was another option where they would, but I guess they're not releasing enough etiquette pictures, but once they're, you know, kind of going
I
through
hope
with the
they
etiquette
pick that
pictures.
Back up. It's been kind of silent.
Yeah, it'd be a bundle, a non-adult bundle, a non-X-rated bundle would be fantastic for people like me. You know,
and they kind of do that on their in a way. They kind of do that with exploitation TV. They right. label it as X-rated. No, yeah. I agree with you. Like, I mean, but you know, it is very different from what they have. I mean, we have a blaxploitation film. You know, we have this 70s All Night at the Pono thing, and then we have Trashy Lady. Like, and sometimes we even have horror titles thrown in there. So I'm kind of curious, you know, as listeners, because obviously we have a lot of listeners that buy Vinegar Syndrome titles. Like, do you enjoy the pornographic films too? And let Vinegar Syndrome know, do you enjoy them? Has this opened your eyes to a different side of cinema like it did me? I mean, mm-hmm. Vinegar Syndrome is the cause of me liking this stuff, because I never watched this stuff until eventually it came on my doorstep and I was like, okay, I don't know really what to do with this. Do I watch it? And I did. And I was like, man, there's something. I mean, obviously I picked a good title to start with.
First one you started with?
Mine was the telephone book.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, which it was not porno, but mm-hmm. I mean, still, it was, you know, something out there. And I watched it, and then I was like, okay. And then the next title I watched was Marilyn and the Senator. And I watched that, and I was like, you know, it's a 2-hour movie, and like 2 hours and 10 minutes. It's ridiculously wow. long. And Bill Marigold is the lead in it, and he's, you know, fucking hilarious. But there's so much weird shit going on in the movie, and so entertaining. You know, just the kind of the sex scenes blew by. And during the sex scenes, funny stuff was happening. Like, there's a scene where Bill Marigold is standing by the fireplace, and his girlfriend wants to give him a blowjob, but for some reason there's a full chicken, a cooked chicken on the mantle. And he just picks it up, and he starts eating this cooked full chicken while he's getting a blowjob. And like, the chicken grease is on his face. He's eating wings, tearing it off, just devouring this chicken while getting a blowjob. And I was like, this is the most odd thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, it just felt like, you know, I've seen some weird shit, but I've never seen that.
I mean, but that's inspired.
You know, that is brilliant. That's a brilliant scene. So watching that, I was like, man, this, you know, this is so, like, we have, you know, it's because the same thing as I was watching like Night Train to Terror, because I've already seen that, but you know, it was released on Blu-ray. So I'm watching Night Train to Terror, Telephone Book, and Maryland Center. I was like, this is fucking great. Like, this is the weirdest like little barrage of movies, and just so different. And that's what really turned me on to it, because I was watching films like that. I mean, then I come across Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls, and my life changed. I was like, this is one of the most fun. This movie's hilarious. Like, if you took the sex out of this movie, this would be one of the top sex comedies of the 80s. Like, this is great. So yeah, I mean, they definitely opened my eyes to a different type of cinema. I mean, obviously, you know, stuff like Trashy Lady and some of the other titles, I'm like, okay, it is okay. You know, no big deal. I think I was kind of on the fence with like Blue Ice, kind of the same thing, yeah. But a lot of crazy shit's in Blue Ice. Yeah, so yeah. It makes you want to watch it more.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of the standard straight pornos where there's 20 minute sex scenes and 2 minutes of dialogue. I'm not really into that. But anyways, I think with our listeners, I would really like to know, do you enjoy this type of thing? Do you enjoy these movies? And, you know, let Vinegar Syndrome know. I mean, if not, maybe they can develop a package for non-porno.
Right. It's stupid of me to think that it would be just for me, but it, you know.
No, I think I don't think you're alone on that, because I've talked to people before and they're like, I'm not really into the whole porno thing. And the thing is that porn's porn. When you talk about it, you mentioned porno, the very first thing that pops in your head is like Jenna Jameson having sex.
Mm-hmm.
So not for me at least. But anyways, you know, porno, you think, oh, porno. Oh yeah. You watch people fuck. Well, you know, there's different caliber. There's a whole range of different types of porno. I mean, we have everything from like sexploitation to, you know, hardcore roughies to, mm-hmm. you know, kind of the well-made like stuff like Corruption and Trashy Lady. You know, it's different, all different scale of stuff. So, give it a shot just to see what you think. The titles that I mentioned, like, you know, Hot and Sassy Pizza Girls, Telephone Book, I would start off with those and then kind of go from there. I really think people can get into it if you're open to it. And you like, if you like cinema, if you like movies, you know, stuff like Corruption and, you know, Telephone Book and Hot and Sassy Pizza Girls, I really think those can get you. Dracula Sucks is another good one. I think those can really get you into it, mm-hmm. for the most part. But yeah, I agree with you. I think they're, you know, maybe look into different options. I think that would be a cool thing for Vinegar Syndrome to do. Unless this is something that is a major seller for them.
Right.
Maybe right. This is what people want and you are alone.
I could be alone. I do want to know though, like, I'm craving some more, Etiquette Pictures titles. And I know that they were they're doing a few of the Blaxploitation through Vinegar Syndrome label, but weren't they going to be putting, they're going to be putting Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song on Etiquette Pictures, correct?
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
I think it's more like films that had a bigger impact or artsy fartsy.
Right. Which I'm, and the ones they choose are just so fantastic.
Yeah, the three right now is a Catch My Soul.
Yeah.
American Dreamer, which, dude, this Vinegar Syndrome podcast right now that's happening. Fucking watch American Dreamer.
That's amazing.
Literally one of the best documentaries you've ever seen in your fucking life.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good. And then,
Some Call It Loving, which is.
Yeah, Some Call It Loving, which is.
It's a great film. It's a beautiful film.
I mean, but I think that's kind of, you know, we just talked about those three. That's kind of Vinegar Syndrome style. I mean, next with this May pack, we have, you know, Rudy Ray Moore's follow up to mm-hmm. Dolomite, the Human Tornado. We have Psychic Killer, that's fucking great, by the way. And then we have the two new Picoramas, which are pretty much, you know, straight porno. So, I mean, you have Blaxploitation, this like horror drama thriller, and then two pornos. I don't know. I that's variety. And I think people like variety, and that's something they provide. But
variety,
you know,
is
maybe
spice
not,
of life.
Maybe not everybody's into the P and the V.
Well, I'm into the P and the V, just rather be. Well, you know,
yeah, obviously you'd my just rather be the, yeah.
All right. Let's, dude, we need to talk some Rudy Ray Moore and some Dolomite.
I like the way you say it too. You say
Dolomite. I mean, what are you going to say? Like Dolomite? No, you got to say, you got to give the inflection on
Dolomite. Thing, it's almost like, what's that? Dynamite type.
Yeah.
Dynamite Dan. But anyways.
Oh, man. 1975. Rudy Ray Moore's first jump into cinema. He had these like stand-up. Was it stand-up or poetry albums where he would appear naked with naked women on the cover of the LPs?
Yeah, he was had this like kind of this pimp persona.
Yeah.
You know. So yeah, it's weird. Like from him starting to you know, 'cause I think he started doing stuff like when he was in the army or something, and then he started doing like comedy clubs and everything like that, and then doing kind of music and everything like that. But he was doing this shit like in the 50s.
Yeah.
Like the late 50s, he started out as kind of a comedian, and then slowly in the 70s, building it up, and then he created this character, Dolomite. Dolomite.
Dolomite. So,
and then he kind of like blew up because
right, that's what the character he was doing on these records, right? He was doing the Dolomite character.
Right, right. Okay, and that was his most popular thing. It's almost like a Saturday Night Live skit that got too popular. They made it into a movie.
Right.
But he's got to do his like stand up, which he does in the movie. And it's so fucking weird. I still can't get into it. But anyways, you know, and this came out during the time with, you know, stuff with, you know, you had, you know, Richard Pryor, you had, you know, Cosby, you had Red Fox. So, and you also had, this is the fucking 70s, right? So this is like your segregation time. So, you know, you had, you know, these black people making black movies for black people. You had the birth of blaxploitation. But also you had, you know, rhythm and blues artists. You had singers. You had rappers. Then you had comedians. And that's kind of where all this started from.
Blaxploitation exploded in like, what, 72, 73, I feel like.
Yeah, so this is definitely one of the films that really kickstarted it because it was a comedy.
Well, this was 75, so this was kind of like halfway through, you know, the blaxploitation.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Because before we had things like, you know, Hammer, Truck Turner, more of the kind of like the hard hitting, you know what I mean?
Well, I was mostly talking about as far as comedies go, this is kind of what kickstarted the whole, you know, we can be funny too. Let's just not put down the man the whole time, but we also have to be kind of a badass.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, kind of definitely take, you know, kind of all those elements that were popular, or they were trying to kind of do their own thing, and they just meshed them all together. 'Cause you have Kung Fu, you have, you know, pimps, you have, hoes, you have money, you have pimps and pimps and pimps, and you have, comedic breakdowns and stand up during the movie.
Full on musical interludes.
Yeah. And just, I don't know. It's just everything. And it is great.
Well, I think that's what makes Dolomite so special, I think, is the combination of everything and that it doesn't take itself too seriously. I mean, it's the story. I mean, I feel like most parodies, like, I'm having a brain fart here. What's that parody that came out recently, a few years back, of
Black Dynamite? Pictures?
Black Dynamite. Black Dynamite was definitely, had a lot of parody. You know, it was basically, there's a lot of Dolomite stuff in Black Dynamite for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the setup to Dolomite is he's in jail. He gets called in by the warden to, they feel like maybe they locked up the wrong guy because they locked him up and there's still drugs and there's still guns on the streets. And his nephew gets shot. And so he basically gets released to work with, I don't know if that's how law enforcement works.
No, by the way. They release him to Queenie B.
Release to Queenie B. Yep.
Is her name? Her name's Queenie B, right?
Queenie. Yeah. Yep. And so he needs to find out how these guns and drugs are still on the street, who's responsible, and he thinks he knows.
And they kind of tell him right away.
Yeah, Willie Green. This is no mystery.
Hey, Dolomite, do you know who Willie Green is? Yeah, I know that motherfucker.
Yeah. So he has to basically take down Willie Green, and he makes the great thing is, like, as soon as he's out of prison, he changes out of his horrible suit, changes into a good suit, his good old polyester white suit.
bitch, you bring me these goddamn cotton drawers. You know I don't wear no cotton drawers.
And proceeds to get a ride and some sexy time with a few of the ladies.
He's like fucking in the car, getting dressed, and then gets pulled, like, ends up killing people like 2 minutes yeah, after.
It's ridiculous. Because I'm watching this and I'm like, did he just kill those motherfuckers? Like, he just straight up, like, he's just out of prison and they get harassed by these white folk pulled over.
Mm. Fucking the man. You know, it's called the man, Sean.
White man.
That's no, just the man.
He teaches that white man to dance.
It's just the man.
The man. But it's, this dance. Movie is like endlessly entertaining. And I think it was weirder than I thought it would be. You know, I was thinking
it's,
I was in for like.
It's odd.
It's odd. Yeah. It's
just, because mainly it's just, it's almost a genre mashup for blaxploitation. Because, yeah. Like I said, it has kind of this, you know, gangster thing where it's like, hey, man, we need you. We thought it was bad when you were on the streets. It's mm-hmm. worse now. You need to get out and fix it, even though you're a gangster. And then there's comedy. And it kind of completely goes away from the shooting and killing
right.
to him just doing stand-up in a parking lot for like 15 minutes.
Yep.
And then it's like, you know, I don't know. It's so funny because it doesn't know what it wants to be, but it never – it's odd, but it doesn't feel like wrong. Like everything is meshed together very well.
Yeah.
For the most part. But I mean that's just – I think that's the charm of Rudy Ray Moore.
I think this is the most
and this character.
This is the funnest. This one has a good sense of humor, kind of like Superfly kind of had a sense of humor about itself.
Yeah, but I mean Superfly was made in a response to like Cops and The Man.
Yeah.
Like this doesn't it only kind of attacks like white people in the sense of just joking around.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like mean. It's not like, you know,
right.
you're you know, right. you white motherfucker. It's more or less, you know, he says that rat soup eating honky motherfucker, you know, but I don't know. I think this is definitely more fun. It's just not, you know, it's almost for everybody, it seems like, you know, a lot of blaxploitation films were geared towards the black community. I think with this in particular, it was kind of open to anybody that did like Rudy Ray Moore. You can enjoy it.
Yeah. Now he wrote this, right? Rudy Ray Moore wrote it. He produced it.
Dude, that's why the movie's so weird is because he was everything.
There's an interview with him. It's like it's almost they took like three different interviews and they spliced them together. Him telling like the story how, you know, his career, and it's fantastic because he's like still playing that Dolomite character even today in these interviews.
Oh, you're saying back? Okay,
Rudy Ray Moore. I mean, there's like a few interviews. There's like a recent one. I don't know if it was filmed for this, but there was one before, and then the one was almost looked like VHS quality.
No, he died. He died a few years ago.
Oh, did he? Okay.
He died. I was going to say it's definitely not recent.
Okay.
He died. I don't know. He died in the late 2000s. I think.
Okay. Well, so it's one of the more. There must be an interview that they did in the 2000s, but it's great hearing him talk about his career and everything. And but I never realized that he was kind of responsible for this whole thing. Like he wrote the thing. He came up with the screenplay or with the story. Yeah, obviously he probably didn't write the screenplay, but so he produced it, wrote it, and starred in the thing.
Yeah, and I mean, he came with his buddy who Willie Green, the guy who plays Willie Green, is actually the director of the movie.
Okay,
who's
DeVille
a veteran?
Martin.
A veteran in blaxploitation cinema. I mean, he's in fucking everything. But you know, from a bit part to kind of a co-lead, he's in Fred Williamson's Nigger Charlie,
mm-hmm.
his you know, Boss Nigger, Legend Nigger Charlie. There's a third one, the Soul of Nigger Charlie. And then, I mean, like every Fred Williamson movie from Hammer to Black Caesar, like he shows up everywhere. So yeah, it was nice to, you know, this is kind of his chance to, you know, he made all those movies and then he directed Rudy Ray Moore. So that's kind of, I think that's kind of the peak of his career. Like, he really worked kind of towards that. And he took everything that he's, you know, kind of been in, because he's around the block in blaxploitation cinema for a while, and kind of funneled all of that into this movie. I think that's the reason why it's so fun and it is a mixed genre, is because, you know, Derville Martin came from all of his stuff with kind of the badassery from Fred Williamson, and even some of the goofiness that's in like Black Caesar and Hammer, and just kind of corniness, stuff even like Hell Up in Harlem, stuff like that. I mean, he's just, I think he is the reason why this worked, because I think Rudy Ray Moore is just wants the camera on himself and just kind of does stand up. Uh-huh. And I think that he really took it this route to make a very memorable blaxploitation film, rather than, because I think, I think it would have been kind of a, you know, because when you give filmmakers a chance to write, direct, and star in their own stuff, it becomes all about them sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think with him behind the camera, he kind of took that in different directions, because you can kind of tell Rudy Ray Moore from his interviews and everything
he takes over.
Right. And that's his personality. Yeah. And it's fine. It's nothing to, you know, nothing bad with him. But I mean, from everything from his movies, from Petey Wheatstraw to Human Tornado, and, you know, he's done some others. I actually have the box set of his, like, you know, of his movies.
Disco Godfather.
Yeah, Disco Godfather. And I mean, he came back as Dolomite, like, kind of in the late 90s and stuff.
Yeah, it's weird. But he had two, like sequel, like, after Human Tornado, right?
Well, I'm saying, like, in the 90s.
Yeah. Legend of – no. Yeah.
He came back as Dolomite.
Yeah.
I think it was, like, 98 or something like that. He was in it. I mean, he showed up every now and then. But – if you would have gave everything to him, he would have just made it about himself, and it probably wouldn't have been as entertaining. So I'm glad that he didn't direct the movie. But I think for the most part, this is definitely one of the more memorable ones, because it is fun. Yeah. You know, because a lot of these movies, it's like, man, Fred Williamson's a badass. Like, you know, you watch these movies, and it's like, man, they're really making a message. Yeah. With this movie, but, you know, Sweetback's Badass Song, man, they're really saying something. This one was just like, we just like what we're doing, and we're just going to do what we want.
Well, and the villain wasn't this secretive white man. It was, you know, a fellow black man, you know, who was just a rival kind of pimp or I don't know if he's a pimp. Was he a pimp too? Willie Green, was he a pimp, or he was more interested in the bar and stuff, right?
No, yeah, he was. I don't think he was too much into the
club. He wanted to take over the club. But so the main villain isn't an evil white man. There are evil white men in the film, but
yeah,
you know, this not, and the point isn't to be all against that. You know, so he was up against his own. Some of my favorite things in this film, Queen Bee's pretty great, played by Lady Reed. I think she was someone he knew in real life. Like, she wasn't really an actress, and she
all these people were friends.
Yeah, friends.
I think that's the extremely positive side to this, is because everybody's in it for the same reason.
Yeah,
you know, and they're there to make a movie. They are there to spread a message, but they're all there to do the same thing. Like, money really isn't a factor, or making a great movie, or the cinematography has to be perfect. It's just a bunch of friends making movies, and we have that these days too. And those end up being some of our favorites.
Yeah.
So,
no, another favorite thing of mine was the Reverend Gibbs, who's, you know, basically like a Black Panther type speech going on in the church. And then the white police walk in, and he goes into like an invocation type, like, "Oh Lord," they, you know, with the, that he has, of course, guns stashed in the church. You know, that
those were given as gifts.
Yeah.
Those are gifts for the church. And then Dolomite's women. I love the cover of this, because it's Rudy Ray Moore, Dolomite, with his all-girl army of kung fu killers.
Yes, they're all trained kung fu.
bone crushing, skull splitting, brain blasting action.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God, could you sell me any more? The answer is no. Like, Jesus Christ.
Dude. Isn't there a scene where he goes in and all the women are all the, you know, I mean, they're all prostitutes, but they're also trained in kung fu. And isn't there a scene when they're all training and she's like, oh, this is where they train?
Yeah, I know, dude. It's so weird. It's so weird.
Oh,
but I mean, everything from the one-liners that Dolomite says
are great.
Perfect.
Oh my God.
I mean, every like line of dialogue, it's just some of it's like off the fucking wall too.
Put this hush puppy up your motherfucking ass.
Oh yeah, yes. It's, man, move over, let me pass before I shove these motherfucking pull these motherfucking hush puppies out of your ass.
Whenever he goes in those dialogues, and you can almost tell like those were made up on the spot. They had to have been.
Yeah, let's talk about the stand up in the parking lot.
Yes.
So Dolomite gets out, and they're like, "Man, this is Dolomite. Dolomite, do some stand up." This goes on for fucking 10 fucking minutes.
Fast forwarded a little bit.
He starts talking about two people on the Titanic. And it's all rhymes, and eventually it just kind of just goes into a different tangent of people. Like, it starts off with two people on this ship hitting the iceberg and floating away, and then their lives afterwards. But it's uncomfortable because it's like a poem. So it's like if you were like, roses are red, violets are blue. Then everybody just starts laughing hysterically. And then he says the next line, and then everybody laughs hysterically. And then he says another, and it just keeps going and going and going. And it's like you're grabbing your hair and you're like, when is this going to end? Because this doesn't feel like it's part of the movie. This is mainly like, hey, Derville, can I do my stand-up now? Like, that's like the whole point of making the movie was for this scene. And then he does it twice as well, which is super fucking funny because it keeps going and going. And it's just, it's completely out of place, but at the same time, it's just, you just can't look away. It's like a train wreck because it's not funny at the same time.
Right.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know. Like I said, it's like so much it's like a genre mashup and it's out of place, but it doesn't feel like it's not jarring to the point where it takes you away from the movie. It's just that's Dolomite. Like as soon as you watch it and you have that opening, it's like fucking Rudy Ray Moore looks like he's fucking high as fuck in the beginning of this movie. Like he obviously is. Like everybody's probably fucking doing drugs on the set.
In some scenes, his eyes are open more than others.
Dude, his eyes are shut a lot of the movie. And you know, it's just like he in the fucking Creeper. Like that guy's got to be on drugs. Like I'm afraid they're really shooting up heroin in that scene. Like I mean, he even says, "What's the thing?" He's, man, I'm so badass, I gotta kick my ass two times a day. But, like, I think with that that aspect of it, of them acting like that and being like that, you kind of get the drift of Dolomite in the first 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially when they go out to the car, he's like, you know, open your trunk. Man, you got a warrant, I got nothing in there. Open it up. Man, you don't want to see in there, I ain't got nothing. And then he opens it up. And it is like has the fur coats and the fur things of cocaine.
Drugs, yeah.
Someone planted that, man. That ain't mine. I don't know how that got in there. It's just like he doesn't even sound innocent or is trying to sound it. He's just completely denying everything.
Oh man.
And then that fight scene in the beginning when he's like he touches the cop and the cop falls into the trunk and mm-hmm. then cop gets up and he's got blood all over his face.
Yeah.
But no, it's so cheesy, and it really is.
It's a good cheesy though. It's not like a train wreck cheesy. It's super entertaining, and there's just a ton of stuff in this movie that I love. Like when he finally has the club back, and he had that band playing. I had to take a picture of these two guys. This one guy like with the tambourine or whatever, just kind of and gotta go back and forth, you know, snapping his fingers. Oh my God.
No, I know what you're talking about.
It's great.
I wanted to take a picture when he first goes home and the first time he has sex in the bed. There's like this statue of this black man's face.
Yeah.
And it's just like this long neck. And I think it's supposed to be Rudy Ray Moore. Scott, and it
I
is funny.
It probably is. I gotta watch
when he's in the creeper's room and he's shooting up heroin. The creeper has Dolemite Records on the wall, just standing up. Like, you know, it's like I wanna be there on the set of them setting up the scenes. And probably Rudy Ray Moore is just telling everybody, like, this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
Like, set that record up. Set it up there. And, like, everybody's like, no, put it down. You are Dolemite. It's weird because you're promoting your own product in the movie.
Well, but I feel like they kind of in that world, like, they all know who he is. You know what I mean? Like, he has the records. Well,
no, it's true. It is true because he does stand up. So, but it's never, like, really said.
Yeah.
That it is Dolemite. So it's almost like they're breaking, like almost not a fourth wall, but they're breaking that wall saying, well, he is Dolemite, but he's not really playing the Dolemite character, but he is Dolemite and he does stand up, but he's a gangster, but he's never done stand up before as this gangster character.
Right.
And you're like, what? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
That's hilarious.
But it really is Rudy Ray Moore doing whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah.
So.
I love that his outfits too, his pimp outfits, especially at the club before he goes to talk to Willie. He gets changed after his performance, then he gets all dolled up again in another suit.
Yeah.
That suit's amazing. To have like a serious conversation in this suit, that is just, I can't explain it, man. These polyester suits are killing me. It's amazing, the hat.
And the fight scenes, man, is like this Rudy Ray Moore is kind of an out of shape dude.
Right.
And he's like doing spin kicks and like punching people and like, the fight scenes, like, they obviously didn't rehearse, it seems.
Yeah.
Because they're not even touching each other, and they're just falling down. And, I mean, it's basically equivalent to, like, this is a bad reference, but this is the only thing I can think of, is in Napoleon Dynamite, when they go to the kickboxing thing,
yeah,
and he's barely hitting him because it's just basically a tough guy, like, you know, a bigger guy beating up on little people.
Right.
That's exactly what it's like. He's barely, like, he just, like, lifting up his foot as far as he can in these fucking tight polyester pants.
Yep.
And, like, almost, like, kicking the guy in the nuts. But, like, the guy, like, flies back. It's so fucking funny.
It's great, man. And the end club, you know, the how everything ends, the big brawl in the club is just fantastic with the kung fu ladies getting involved and everything that goes down. It's great, man. If I can't believe it's taking me this long to see Dolemite.
Oh, dude, when you see, I mean, he plays Dolemite in The Human Tornado.
I can't wait to watch Human Tornado.
That's the sequel.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I think Vinegar Syndrome's already kind of said they're doing Petey Wheatstraw and Disco Godfather.
Nice, okay.
So they're doing those four movies with Rudy Ray Moore, and I think that's it. But this is also part of their, because whenever they announced Epic Pictures, they announced that their partnership was Xenon as well, which I know a lot of people haven't talked about, but Xenon is specifically a company that released blaxploitation movies. So I really hope we fucking get Penitentiary and Penitentiary 2, because that would be a fucking Rudy Ray Moore's in Penitentiary 2. But I really hope that this is kind of – this really kind of sparks interest and we get more films from Xenon, from Vinegar Syndrome, because, I mean, the fucking transfer on this shit, it looks great, and they packed it
with
special features.
Yep.
From did you actually watch the Boom Mic version?
Yeah, I didn't sit and watch it again with the Boom Mic version, but I did.
The Boom Mic version is fucking hilarious.
It's amazing, man.
I mean, they have the making of. I mean, there's so many fucking featurettes on here. It is really great what they put together.
Yeah, the making of is great. I watched all this, you know, the documentary stuff. You know, it's just great. Lady Reed Uncut. I mean, the locations they do then and now, and I really want to listen to the historical commentary track by his biographer.
Ooh,
Mark Jason Murray. It's the
Historical commentary track by Rudy Ray Moore's biographer, yeah. Mark. Okay, I didn't actually see that.
So yeah. I'm looking forward to watching it again with that on.
But the boom mic version, like if you're going to watch Dolemite, I would say watch the boom mic version because it makes the movie just even better. It just makes it more entertaining.
Because that thing just shows up. And it's hilarious.
It's pretty close to hitting people in the face at some points. And it just adds a new level of charm to the movie.
It's great.
Because it really is just a bunch of guys like in their neighborhood just making a movie.
Yeah. It's fantastic, man. They Finnegan's Syndrome knocked this out of the park. I'm looking forward to their other things. I know that they're going to be releasing Coonskin. I think that's going to be under Etiquette Pictures, that Ralph Bakshi.
Ralph Bakshi movie.
Yeah.
Wait, Coonskin is Vinegarson? That was just released on Blu-ray.
No.
Are you sure it's Coonskin? That was just released on Blu-ray not too long ago.
I think it was released on another. Am I wrong?
I think you might be.
Germany released it. Yeah, no, Etiquette Pictures.
What Ralph Bakshi movie am I thinking about that was just released?
I don't know. But no, Vinegar Syndrome has Sweetback's Badass Song and Coonskin going to be under Etiquette Pictures.
So okay.
I'm looking forward to those two for sure. There's been a little drought in the Etiquette Picture stuff, but I know that they're probably getting those ready for release. So, last I saw, they were going to be released in late 2015, but we haven't seen anything yet. So yeah. I'm expecting them this year.
They're busy, man. That's for one thing. I mean, we have a company that's putting out monthly. They're putting out more than, just with this, we have that 12 movies, basically. So 12, 13, 14, 15 with this next week or next month, we have, six. So, name another company that's putting out this many movies a month.
Nah, they're doing great work. The Lord's work.
They're working around the clock.
I love when they'll post on Instagram, just a shot of something in the scanner.
Oh yeah. The scanner. That's one thing that James always says. The scanner's always going.
Always going.
Because even for other people that they work with, they have one of the best scanners in the biz apparently.
Yep.
And they're scanning everything with helping Arrow out to Massacre Video to what's that company that released Poor Pretty Eddie? They released Stranger. They have another company they're working with a lot of people.
Well, their scanner's great. Their stuff looks really good. So. Cool, we did it. We got through the April pack, and I'm looking forward to the Blaxploitation for next in May. We're in May, so this month. So, I'll give the peep for science. I'll give the peep shows a shot.
Peekorama,
that's it. Peep show, Peekorama, whatever. All right. It's time for us to do the drawing, man. We got some Magnolia movies to give away. We got to do this and then bounce out of here.
Let's do it.
We're recording pretty late, and dude, you got to be tired. We got to get this done.
Yep.
I'm going to choose five names from the hat, and then I'll pull up your guys' emails. The question was, what was your favorite Magnolia / Magnet release? And they were gracious enough to donate five copies of The Last Shift on DVD, and then five copies of Tangerine.
Yeah, got them right DVD. Here. Got them right here.
So we'll be sending these out to you, and you guys emailed us with your favorite Magnolia release or Magnet release. I would have to say, man, I was thinking about this, and they do have a lot that they've released that I like, but I think the one thing that turned me on to Magnet was their DVD of Murder Party.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like my introduction to Magnet, but then also my introduction to Jeremy Solinger?
Solner.
Introduction to him. So.
Yeah, Murder Party is great. I think my I'm just going to go with my favorite My favorite is definitely Beyond the Black Rainbow, of course.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But next to Eden Log, if you've ever... Dude, have you seen Eden Log?
You know, I started watching it once, and I've kind of the wrong frame of mind to watch it. So.
It's definitely a weird movie, but I thought you might like that because it's kind of science fiction, weird ass.
Yeah, I really want to... I really want to revisit it.
So, all right. But anyways.
So, as we were talking.
They better be good answers because I'll fucking rub shit in this envelope. So, I'm going to judge too. I'm going to be really harsh. I'm going to be normal Dick Brad. Watch.
All right.
You just get a little worried there, Sean?
No.
Are you trying to pick a name?
We're picking names here.
All right. You're going to pick them one at a time or you're going to pick them all at once? What's going on?
I picked them all at once.
Oh, Jesus.
No, as we were talking, I was picking them here. Finished all up. Right. Okay.
Let's fucking go.
All right. Jesus Christ. Let me pull up my email because I need to find their
emails. Oh, my God. Here. You should have this prepared already.
All right. So the first one is Ryan M.
Ryan M, you can't even give us your fucking name?
I
come on, Ryan.
No, they did. I just want to, you know.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, that's true.
Because you never know.
Yeah, we could have those people that really hate the screencast that try to hunt people down and listen to it. Not kidding.
All right,
so what did Ryan pick?
Ryan picked, my favorite would probably be I Saw the Devil. Honorary mentions would be World's Greatest Dad, Tucker and Dale versus Evil, Bad Milo, and Hobo with a Shotgun.
All right. Ryan is fucking in my cool book.
Thank you, Ryan.
You just won copies of Last Shift, sealed copies of Last Shift in Tangerine on DVD.
Awesome.
Enjoy them.
All right. Next up is Andrew B.
Andrew B. Let's fucking hear it, Andrew.
I do have
B.
you guys' last names. I will be emailing you guys. All right. Here's. I think that my favorite release has got to be Time Crimes.
Yes. Fucking Nacho Vigalondo.
Solid, solid pick.
That's a solid pick. What's his name? Andrew?
Andrew.
Andrew, you're officially in my cool book. You get copies of Tangerine Last Shift on DVD.
All right. Here we go. Next, Lily.
Lily okay.
S.
Yes.
She says her favorite is Troll Hunter.
Fucking Lily, you are a badass too.
Troll Hunter's great.
Troll Hunter is fucking fantastic. Ew, I'll tell you a story about Troll Hunter real quick.
Do it.
I know you're so super excited. So Troll Hunter played at a fantastic fest I was at. No one had any clue what the movie was. Basically, only one person screened it prior. It had no IMDb page. Wow. It wasn't even known. And they screened that, and it was fucking incredible.
I love that flick. I love
Lily,
it so much.
You are officially in my cool book. Last Shift and Tangerine are yours.
Nice.
Is that our first lady? And no, we've had another lady that has entered in. I'm happy about that.
All right.
Because we can be pretty offensive, so I'm happy. Hopefully they're not offended.
Jesse E. My five favorite Magnolia releases.
Jesus,
are
Jesse, you need to calm the fuck down.
Melancholia, Mr. Nobody, Compliance, Life Itself, and Jesus Camp.
You fucking artsy fartsy motherfucker.
Jesus Camp is nightmare.
Jesus Camp is a fucking nightmare fuel.
God.
Yeah. I wonder if Jesse's how's Jesse spell it?
Jesse.
That's a dude. All right, Jesse, I don't know about your picks. You sound like the artsy-fartsy type, so you will love Tangerine, my friend. You probably already like jerking off on Tangerine. He's like, yes. All right, Jesse, you're in my cool book, too. You get copies of Last Shift and Tangerine on DVD.
All right, here we go. Finally, Chris B.
Chris B.
My favorite Magnet release is Let the Right One In.
Yes.
Troll Hunter, Monsters, The Host, and Time Crimes are all pretty awesome, though, too.
Man, fucking Chris good B. stuff. Is in my cool book. Dude, all these guys had really good picks. Lady.
Oh, yeah.
And two, Lady had a good pick.
Yep. So,
yeah,
Ryan.
I mean, Magnet fucking releases a lot of cool shit.
They do.
So, you know.
They do.
You can't really go wrong.
So Ryan, Andrew, Lily, Jesse, and Chris B, you guys will all be receiving emails from me. I will be asking for your address. Please respond to those emails. Give me that address, and you will be receiving these DVDs in the mail.
With no poop, because you all did really good.
Right. Picks. Right. Good job. Good job, everybody. Go team. Thank you guys so much for participating in this drawing. This is our most popular drawing yet. We had the most names for me to pull to sort through here. Not sort through, grab out of the hat. And no, it's not.
You just gave yourself away. It's all rigged.
It's not rigged.
Mainly because I have no idea who these fucking people are.
Neither do I. It's
funny because, I mean, we had, you know, our avid listeners, like, they've always, like, participated, so it's sometimes the same names are like, dude, you can't enter again, you've won everything.
You've won, like, every drawing, man, I'm sorry.
They're probably using different names, like, fucking jerks.
No, I'd recognize the emails. I do recognize some of these, emails from those of you online, so thank you guys so much for participating, and we want to keep doing these types of drawings. I know that I need to get some coffee from Coffee Shop of Horrors. I was supposed to be getting a package and I haven't got it yet because I want to do one of those.
Thank you Magnet and Magnolia for giving us 10 movies to give away. That was awesome. Miss Kate Fasha, who's probably listening.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you, Kate, for helping us out and quote unquote sponsoring a giveaway. Well, they did sponsor a giveaway.
I know that we'll be we will be having I think the next giveaway we will have a gift certificate for Grindhouse Video will be in there. So definitely I think this was a success. So thanks to all of you who participated. And if you didn't win, try again. There's gonna be plenty more drawings, plenty more opportunities for you guys to win. All right.
Let's talk about some Vinegar Syndrome coupon.
Yes. Yes, for the May title.
The May title, we talked about Human Tornado and Psychic Killer and a couple pornos.
Mm-hmm.
So if you use the coupon code Screencast-Twister, you'll get $10 off. I think it's $74 is basically what it is right now. If you use the $10 coupon, you get the pack for $64.
That's a damn good deal.
It's good. And normally it ranges for fucking $100. So, yeah.
Yep. Awesome. So do that. If you would like the May package, get that in quick. Faux show. We'd like to thank, of course, our sponsors, Vinegar Syndrome. Give them some love. Horror Pack.
Yes.
Coffee Shop of Horrors. Grindhouse Video. Wolfman of Mars. And, of course, Kevin Spencer, who designed our artwork. Go to our sponsors page, thescreamcast.com/sponsors. If you give any of them some money, if you purchase any of their items, email us, readme@thescreamcast.com, with a screenshot of your transaction, and we will enter you into our monthly Coffee Shop of Horrors drawing. Curating is the wrong word. I'm gathering all those names, putting them in a folder, and once we do the coffee drawing, I have a handful of people to choose from. Choose from the hat. God damn it. Using the wrong verbiage here.
It's okay. We're used to
it. Ask my wife. I put all these names on a sheet of paper, cut them all up into little things, fold them all up, and put them all in a hat. She thinks I'm crazy. She goes, can you just like circle like a few people? I'm like, no, I got to draw the names out of a hat. And she rolled her eyes and walked away. All right. So I think that's going to do it for this week's episode. Brad, do you have anything else that we need to plug?
Oh, no. Just thanks for Magnolia Magnet. Dude, it's fucking like we do this show late, man. There's a lot of work that goes in this shit. So you winners better be happy. Fucking stand up, drawing for your ass.
Heck yeah.
But anyways, no, thanks for everybody. Thanks for all the listeners. Thanks for all the sponsors. Thanks for Magnolia to help us out. Thanks to everybody, because honestly, we wouldn't do this shit if it wasn't for you guys, because I don't enjoy it. So
Dude, when Killer POV said that they were stopping their show, I was like, fuck, if they can't make it, what the hell are we going to do? But of course, they're starting something new, Shockwaves. Of course, with Blumhouse. So, jerks. I was about to try to swoop in and try to take up all their listeners.
Yeah, right.
I was like, I texted Brad when I saw that. When I saw that announcement, I go, "We got to really step up our game."
Yeah, let's good talk shit about more porno.
All right, we'll talk to all of you guys next week. Thank you so much for listening. Later.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.